Case number 17-7037, James Owens et al. Appellants versus BNP Paribas S.A. et al. Mr. Vail for the appellants, Mr. Friedman for the appellees.
Morning.
Morning, Your Honor.
May it please the court, I am John Vail for the plaintiffs. And I still, it looks like I just lost my notes. Excuse me a second. Thank you, Rocky. May it please the court, John Vail for the plaintiffs. The plaintiffs are all victims of the 1998 East Africa embassy bombings. They claim that BNP, the defendant, which pleaded guilty to conspiracy involving manipulating U.S. currency in violation of sanctions, is liable under the Anti-Terrorism Act for their injuries. The district court dismissed the plaintiff's complaint, finding that no claim exists under the ATA for aiding and abetting terrorism, and that plaintiffs had not adequately pleaded a causal connection between BNP's conduct and their injuries. I'll focus first on a couple of factual points that distinguish this case from other cases that are extant. The key two precedents are Boehm and Rothstein. I don't think there's any secret about that. I don't think there's any disagreement about that. BNP admitted that it began manipulating currency transactions for Sudan in 1997.
Manipulated?
Yes.
They admitted they manipulated currency? They admitted that they had a relationship, a banking relationship with Sudan. I don't recall them admitting that they were manipulating currency transactions.
They admitted that in the months, quotation, in the months after it began its relationship with Sudan, its people, its authorized people, turned a blind eye to ignoring sanctions and processing those sanctions for the benefit of Sudan.
Oh, I missed that. Where is that in the record?
That is at J96.
Why does that matter?
One of the reasons it matters is that we know is that it establishes scienter. It establishes a state of mind, willingness to ignore U.S. law and violation of law in order to aid Sudan prior to the bombings. So there's a time period.
You still haven't gotten there. In order to aid Sudan, that's not enough, right?
No, I think it is enough.
Rothstein tells us that there has to be more than just aiding a state-sponsored terrorism. Right? There's got to be some nexus between that aid and the act of terror.
And
you haven't alleged that.
I don't think, first of all, Rothstein, we can go into different, the question of causality. Right? There's a verbal formula of causality that I think is in play here, that I think people agree about. And that's that it's a substantial factor in a sequence of responsible causation. All right? And under general tort law, which we knew Congress wanted to apply here, that kind of aid to Sudan, who has been, this court recently affirmed that Sudan was responsible for the bombings. This court affirmed that last month.
Got all that. What's the connection between what BNP did and those bombings? There's no question that BNP had a relationship with Sudan, but Rothstein, you have to get out from under Rothstein, if you can see my direction here. Rothstein tells us that's not enough. You have to allege some link between the financial transactions between BNP and Sudan and the bombing.
That's the fungibility issue, Your Honor. And Rothstein rejected fungibility in that case, and there are distinct grounds here. One of the reasons Rothstein rejected liability there was it said Iran is this big, complex nation state.
Mm-hmm.
Sudan wasn't. Sudan was effectively a barely functioning state devoted to advancing terror with an economy.
So we're supposed to undertake that sort of inquiry to look at a state and see the level of complexity involved? No,
well,
I don't think so. You're supposed to allege facts that tell us.
Yes.
You're supposed to allege facts that tell us how we get from BNP having transactions with Sudan to the bombing. It's not enough to just say they were involved with Sudan.
Well, Rothstein doesn't quite say that, Your Honor. It says we
so
reject fungibility.
A liability scheme on any bank that undertakes transactions with states with a
it's
nation
not
that's a
strict
state
liability scheme. It is a standard when you have joint actors causing a tort. This is a standard under the restatement. This is a standard form of causality. Boehm says that.
Boehm is dealing with the terrorist organization. Rothstein's dealing with the state-sponsored terrorism. Congress tells us to treat the two differently, right?
The ATA, the ATA, right?
They're not the same. The statutory scheme does not treat them as the same. I mean, the statutory scheme envisions that the State Department can give a bank a license to do business with a state sponsor of terrorism.
That's true, but it didn't hear.
No such latitude when it comes to terrorist organizations. And Boehm was about a terrorist organization.
Well, Rothstein concedes, back to fungibility, Your Honor,
mm-hmm.
Rothstein concedes that it's more likely that funds given to a state sponsor of terrorism will be used to sponsor terrorism than charitable donations.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's more likely enough? That gets you past 12
Well, it's more likely, but the point there is Rothstein is saying that there can be a factual inquiry about fungibility. We have pleaded as a matter of fact that these funds were fungible in that way and led to terrorism. We quoted expert testimony in the complaint on which Congress relied in passing the statute.
In this case, fungibility is a matter of fact. What impact does the Supreme Court's analysis of the statute or the material support statute in Holder v. Humanitarian Project, how does that impact or not your pleading requirements here?
Well, I think Holder says that Holder gives a broader reading of fungibility than Rothstein does. That's my response, Your Honor. And as I said, emphasize, we have pleaded this as a matter of fact. Sudan was much smaller, and we know Sudan was directly involved in the sponsorships of terrorism. What we don't know and what we have not pleaded, the BNP identifies correctly. We have not pleaded that transaction X on day Y that BNP illegally concluded on behalf of Sudan was directly given to Hamas, Hezbollah, and Al-Qaeda in order to perform the bombings. But we don't know that. We couldn't know that. BNP hid that. That was part of its conspiracy, the conspiracy for which it is a convicted felon. Admittedly, not during these years, but we know that its it pleaded guilty beginning in 2002. But we know that its activities started in 1997. Can we make a plausible inference? This is a pleading case. Can we make a plausible inference that Sudan was benefiting from those activities in 1997?
Well, we don't know what the activities were, and you haven't alleged any particular transaction. So, you know, for all we know, the banking relationship started, but there were no transactions in 1997 because there's no allegation that there were.
Well, no, there's the allegation and the fact, the established fact, the unrebuttable fact. This is not a matter of assumption, as in the usual case. This is an established fact
that
Sudan began processing transactions and ignoring the fact that they were illegal in 1997.
No, you mean BNP Paribas.
BNP, excuse me. Yeah. Yes.
Is that enough, though? I mean, that they were engaged in illegal conduct, does that get you to that they were involved in the terrorist bombing?
Boehm,
your response to that is fungibility, right?
Right. Boehm made the analogy, if you give rocks to a person whom you know drops them off of bridges onto cars, if he drops a rock and kills someone, you are liable.
As an aider and abettor.
You are primarily liable under the restatement formulation. Yeah. Boehm says that, and that's the analogy here. Here, BNP gave money, not rocks, but it was money to buy rocks. Rocks were bought, rocks were dropped off of the bridge, and American citizens and brave Kenyan and Tanzanian U.S. nationals who were working at the embassy and defended the U.S. citizens in the embassy were injured and killed as a result. And they are legally responsible for that. And I'll reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Okay, thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Lawrence Friedman on behalf of BNPP. Your Honors have it absolutely right. The fatal defect with the complaint, as the district court found, is that there are no non-conclusory allegations that take the facts to the next step. There's no question that BNPP processed financial transactions for Sudan. Mr. Vail conceded that didn't begin until 2002, which is 4 years after the attacks. And I'll come back to that. So we have a problem with proximate causation right there. But as you, Judge Griffith, said, you have to take it to the next step. There are no well-pleaded allegations that Sudan then transferred funds that became available to it through BNPP to Al-Qaeda.
What about that those paragraph 86 of the complaint, J37, says, starting from at least 1997 up to and through August 7, 1998, the defendants became key to allowing Sudan to sell oil through the U.S. banking system, thereby allowing Sudan to raise money to buy arms and supplies for and otherwise support Hezbollah, Al-Qaeda, and other terrorist organizations.
Judge Wilkins, there are two defects in that allegation. Number one, it's completely conclusory, and number two, it's completely inconsistent with what BNP actually pleaded to. I'd refer, Your Honor, to J.A.
What does that matter?
Well, what it matters...
Why do I care on a motion to dismiss what BNP pleaded to?
Because, Your Honor, under Twombly and Iqbal, there need to be well-pleaded, non-conclusory allegations.
What's conclusory about saying that they took money that they were able to access from your clients and bought arms and bombs with them and gave them to al-Qaeda? What's conclusory about that?
The complaint is based entirely on the June 1994 agreements that BNPP entered into with the Justice Department and with various regulatory authorities. There is nothing in those June 2014 agreements, that supports the notion that, first of all, anything was done by BNPP to open accounts before 2002, and there's nothing to support the notion that anything was given to al-Qaeda.
So you're wanting us to decide a motion for a summary judgment here or a 12B6 motion?
A 12B6 motion, Your Honor. And under Iqbal, it is the obligation of the plaintiffs to make non-conclusory allegations supported by concrete fact and not just throw a feather in the air and say, well, that money was given to al-Qaeda.
Well, I went back and read Iqbal and Twombly this morning just to make sure I understood what they said. And when they use the words conclusory, they're talking about using words like you provided material support. So in other words, just stating the elements of the claim as stated in the statute. Those are conclusory allegations. Facts are something else. Facts are saying, like, you provided support by buying arms or giving them money. That's not a conclusory allegation. That's a fact.
But you can't get past a Rule 12b-6 motion by saying something like that for which there's no factual support provided. It's just a conclusion. What Iqbal and Twombly say.
So Iqbal and Twombly say that you have to cite where your evidence is going to come from?
It's saying that you have to give a factual allegation that would support the claim that can't just be made up out of whole cloth. And the complaint.
How is this made up out of whole cloth?
Because there's nothing in the June 2014 agreements, which is the only evidentiary basis that the complaint cites, that refers to any money having been given to al-Qaeda at all.
So complaints have to cite what their evidentiary basis is for their support. Iqbal and Twombly say that somewhere?
Judge Wilkins, I believe Iqbal and Twombly stand for the proposition that you can't just make up a factual allegation out of whole cloth. It has to be concrete, and it has to be grounded in a factual assertion and support. And here, it is not only made up out of whole cloth, but the complaint purports to be based on the June 2014 agreements. And recall, BNPP was not accused of any terrorism violations. The Justice Department and the Department of Financial Services in New York and the other regulators to which BNPP pleaded guilty didn't find anything about and didn't allege anything, and BNPP did not admit to anything about the monies, what happened with the monies that were made available to Sudan.
I'm not understanding what that has anything to do with how we evaluate a 12B6 motion.
What it has to do with how you evaluate a 12B6 motion is that Iqbal and Twombly say that you must provide non-conclusory factual allegations with a concrete underpinning. And what Your Honor read from the complaint, there's no concrete factual underpinning for that. A plaintiff cannot simply come into court and say, I believe pigs can fly, and I have a claim based on that. You have to base it on something factual.
I understand that, but we're far from that. We've got a country that's a designated state sponsor of terrorism. So how is it some sort of a leap in logic to say that they would sponsor and support terrorists by giving them money or arms as opposed to just giving them safe refuge? How is that some sort of a leap that's implausible?
Yes, it is a leap that is implausible, and I'll give you several reasons why. First of all that BNP pleaded guilty to is a conspiracy that spanned from 2002 to 2007.
Why does what BNP pleaded guilty to have anything to do with this?
Because the plaintiffs have made the election to base their allegations on the June 2014 agreements. They haven't come up with any other facts. They haven't made any factual assertions independent of what is in the June 2014 agreement.
I just read you one from paragraph 86.
What is the statute of limitations on the offenses to which BNP admitted?
I don't know, Your Honor, but it's under 7 years.
It's what?
It's under 7 years. There was no statute of limitations defense that BNP asserted in response to the allegations that were made against
it. You say they didn't go back beyond 2002, but that may be because the statute of limitations would have prevented any kind of conviction for an offense prior to 2002.
I don't think so, Your Honor. The statute of limitations would have been longer than that. I can't cite chapter and verse, but I believe that's the case. But even if you didn't have the fact that the transactions began 4 years after these attacks, I come back to Judge Griffith's point. Rothstein teaches that in order to go from what BNP admitted to, which is being engaging in transactions with a state sponsor of terrorism, in order to go from that to a private right of action by a victim of a terrorist act, you need to satisfy the by reason of proximate causation requirement. Congress was very deliberate.
Look, proximate causation, the fundamental principle, as we all learn in torts, right, is foreseeability. Right? And that's the guts of it, right?
Not quite, Your Honor. The Supreme Court in the Holmes case, in the Anza case, in the Hemi Group case, said that the words by reason of have a very specific meaning. They were imported into the Anti-Terrorism Act from the RICO statute and from the antitrust laws. And they mean more than foreseeability. They mean proximate but for cause. It means that the act at issue was a substantial factor in causing the event to occur, and it was a but-for cause, and it was the proximate cause. With respect, Your Honor, the foreseeability standard is a lower standard of a causal link. And the courts have been clear, the Supreme Court in particular, that by reason of causation is a very deliberate and very strict
standard. Well, look, there's nothing about being a federal judge that precludes one from exercising common sense, right? And doesn't common sense tell you that if you are dealing with a state such as Sudan, which, as your friend points out, is a lot different than Iran, right? That if you're dealing with a state such as Sudan, that you're dealing with something that's a whole lot more like a terrorist organization than anything else. And if you're helping them to fund their activities, look, their primary activities are state-sponsored terrorism. Why would someone not be on notice that if they're dealing with somebody like Sudan, that they're helping terrorism?
For two reasons, Your Honor, at the outset. First of all, the only concrete factual allegations are that the provision of funds to Sudan started 4 years after these attacks occurred. And therefore, those transactions entered into by BNPP cannot be the proximate cause of these attacks. They started 4 years after the attacks occurred.
So we just ignore the paragraph 86 in the complaint. What are we supposed to do with paragraph 86 in the complaint?
Under Iqbal and Twombly, Your Honor, you credit the well-pleaded allegations of the complaint and then determine whether the claims are plausible. That is not a well-pleaded allegation of the complaint
because
it's made up out of thin air. There is nothing cited to support it, and it is counterfactual in relation to the June 2014
agreements. Okay, what about all the language in Iqbal and Twombly saying that we're standing by all of our cases, that judges don't decide the facts, and it might be even, you know, I'm trying to remember exactly how the court put it, but far-fetched or the judge may have serious doubts about whether the plaintiff is going to be able to prove his or her well-pleaded allegations, but that doesn't matter at the 12B6 stage.
I agree with that entirely, Your Honor, but these are not well-pleaded allegations. There are no concrete facts that are cited to support
it. So if they had pleaded that Sudan gave al-Qaeda $10 million in 1997, just months or early 1998, just months prior to this attack, and they just said that, you're saying that wouldn't be a well-pleaded allegation?
They need to cite something that supports it. Here, they elected They elected to support.
So Iqbal and Twombly requires that they cite in the complaint, like, see whatever the source is for it?
It requires that the allegation be stated in a way that is not conclusory. I'm sorry, Your Honor, but just to say that that happened is a conclusory allegation. And Iqbal and Twombly teach that when you're applying Rule 12b-6.
What's a non-conclusory allegation? Give me an example.
A non-conclusory allegation would be BNPP admitted to having given funds that were then provided to Al-Qaeda. There's nothing here to suggest that funds were given to Al-Qaeda. And if I may come back to Judge Griffith's question, Your Honor, my friends have it exactly backwards. Sudan was not worse than Iran. If one looks, and I can provide the court with citations to this, the plaintiffs made this argument in their reply brief for the first time that Rothstein is distinguishable because Sudan is worse than Iran. It's just counterfactual. It's fundamentally not true. If one looks at the State Department reports, it's called Patterns of Global Terrorism, and were to look at what the State Department said from 1993 onward, Iran is always cited as the most active state sponsor of terrorism. Number two, this court ruled, as my friend said, just last month or the month before, in Owens v. Sudan, that there is no evidence whatsoever that Sudan provided funding to Al-Qaeda. To the contrary, this court affirmed Judge Bates' conclusion that all that Sudan gave to Al-Qaeda was safe harbor and logistical support. In fact, Judge Bates, in the Owens against Sudan case, found that Al-Qaeda actually funded Sudan because Sudan had no money. So I can provide cites to the State Department reports if Your Honor wishes, but this notion that Sudan is somehow worse than Iran is completely counterfactual.
Can I go back, and maybe I'm asking you to repeat yourself, can I go back to Judge Wilkins' question? Let's look at paragraph 86 and tell me again what's deficient about this. Your argument is that this allegation is not sufficient to withstand a motion to dismiss under 12b-6. Why?
The reason why is as follows. The complaint is based on the June 2014 agreement.
And this is inconsistent with that.
And that is inconsistent with that.
If they had something else
that they based it on, it would not be clear that that is made up out of whole cloth.
What do you mean, something else they base it on? Let's imagine they don't base it on the 2014 agreement, and on information and belief, they plead what they say in paragraph 86. Is it deficient in that case?
It is not a well-pleaded allegation.
Why not? What are the words
in the context
that are lacking?
Here, I invite Your Honor to look at JA 95, which is the crucial paragraph of the statement of facts of the guilty plea to the Justice Department, which says that the conspiracy that BNPP engaged in with Sudanese banks was from 2002 up through and including 2007. Your Honor, a plaintiff cannot have its cake and eat it too. It cannot rely on these guilty pleas and these consent orders as the basis for...
Iqbal and Twombly said that they weren't eliminating, alternative pleading.
I don't think that's what Iqbal and Twombly meant, that you can predicate a claim based on a guilty plea and then make a factual allegation that is completely contrary to that guilty plea. You can't have it both ways. So you cannot come into court and say, I am basing my allegations on the guilty pleas that BNPP entered into.
Because there's some principle in law that says that a guilty plea is conclusive evidence of everything that happened that went wrong as opposed to a compromise?
Absolutely not, Your Honor, but that is what the plaintiffs chose to base their complaint on, yet they're making allegations that are completely counterfactual to that, and they have no basis for it whatsoever.
So if they come back and amend their complaint and strike the reference to the plea agreement, then we've got a case?
No, you don't have a case, Your Honor, because you still don't have by reason of causation. In order to have by reason of causation, as you, Judge Griffith, said when you were speaking with Mr. Vail, in order to have by reason of causation, you have to establish a direct relationship between the defendant's conduct and here the terrorist attack at issue. And while, as you said before, Judge Griffith, in questioning Mr. Vail, while BNPP pleaded guilty to providing funds to Sudan, processing transactions to Sudan from 2002 to 2007, A, parenthetically, that's 4 years after the attack, so it couldn't have approximately caused the attacks. But more importantly, as Your Honor indicated, there is nothing here to show that the funds were provided to Al-Qaeda. And to the contrary, this court, with these same plaintiffs, this court concluded, and Judge Bates concluded before it, that there is no evidence that Sudan ever provided any funds to Al-Qaeda. To the contrary, the evidence is that Al-Qaeda, given its riches at the time, provided funding to Sudan. If I could just go back to two or three points, Your Honor, that Mr. Vail said. First of all, Judge Randolph, you're absolutely right. There's no allegation of currency manipulation. There are allegations of clearing U.S. dollar transactions for Sudanese banks. I still don't know why plaintiffs referred to that. Second of all, this case is not governed by general tort law. It is governed by the by reason of standard. And the by reason of standard requires that there be a direct relationship between the conduct of the defendant and here, the terrorist attack. And by plaintiff's own characterization, they are alleging an indirect relationship because they're saying that BNPP provided financial services to Sudan, but they don't have the second stage of the equation. They don't have any evidence that monies were provided by Sudan to Al-Qaeda. To the contrary, this court held to the opposite. This is not about fungibility. Fungibility has only been applied when direct aid is given to a designated foreign terrorist organization.
So let's suppose there is another case, not this case, where it is alleged that this state passed $1 of every $100 that it took in to a foreign terrorist organization, and a company knew that and did business with that state nonetheless. Have they stated a claim under the ATA?
Not under the by reason of standard, because the by reason of standard, as applied by the Second Circuit in Rothstein, basing it on how the by reason of standard has been applied in antitrust and RICO cases, would require a showing that that money was provided to the terrorist organization and that it was used in the attack. Congress was very deliberate, as the Rothstein court ruled.
But that's not the way that the Supreme Court interprets how material support works, for instance, in Holder v. Humanitarian Law Project, right?
Holder involves a designated foreign terrorist organization, and it involves direct support. Holder is not a material support case. Holder is a direct support case. Same is true of Boehm, and the same is true of many of the other cases, Kilburn and others, that the plaintiffs rely on.
So you're telling me that if someone donates $100 to a charity and the charity says that we're going to pass a dollar, 1% of every dollar that we get to Al-Qaeda, that person hasn't violated the material support statute?
That would state a claim, Your Honor, and I'm litigating this exact issue in the Second Circuit now, but under Rothstein, the plaintiff would be required to show that the funds that the defendant provided were in fact made available to the terrorist organization and were used in the attack. The courts, every court to address this issue of indirect support for terrorism by providing aid to a state sponsor of terrorism. Every court, it's Rothstein, it's Al-Raji, it's district courts, every single court has ruled that by virtue of the by reason of standard, which Congress chose very deliberately, not strict liability, there's that passage in Rothstein that Judge Bates cited saying that there is no strict liability for providing funds to a state sponsor of terrorism. Rather, if Congress wanted there to be strict liability, it would not have chosen the by reason of standard. The by reason of standard requires something more. So Judge Wilkins, every court to address this issue has said that if you want to make an Anti-Terrorism Act claim for material support that is premised on indirect funding of terrorism, and here it's undisputed this is an indirect funding case, you need to show that, A, the funds were provided by the direct recipient to the terrorist organization, and B, that the funds were actually used in the attack. That's common sense.
Okay,
that's by reason of causation.
So let's take your argument to its logical conclusion here. So suppose someone gives $100 directly to Al-Qaeda, and that's what's pled, and then Al-Qaeda later bombs the embassy.
That's material support. But here,
but how do we know that that $100 was used for the bombing?
You can try to do that through discovery, but at least you have the threshold allegation.
Why isn't that exactly the situation of the plaintiffs here?
Because
how are they supposed to know with the specificity that you're requiring? How are they supposed to know before discovery?
I can tell you, Your Honor,
okay,
how they're supposed to do it. First of all, these plaintiffs already have a claim that they have asserted. They have prevailed and won a $10.2 billion judgment against Sudan. Sudan is alleged to be the direct supporter through providing safe harbor and through logistical support. So they have already done that. They have satisfied this court and Judge Bates prior to this court that they have made a material support claim against Iran as the direct supporter of Al-Qaeda. Second of all, what the plaintiffs could do is look for a factual support in the investigative record and the criminal record. The difficulty they encounter here is that there is no such support because there is no evidence in that record of anything having been done for Sudan, let alone having been done for Al-Qaeda, before 2002, which is 4 years after the attack, which suggests to me, Your Honor, that there's no claim to be made against BNPP. Rather than to say they should get discovery to see if they can find something more, they chose to predicate their claims on the investigative and criminal record, and the investigative and criminal record doesn't support their claims. That tells me not that they should be able to burden us and the court with a lawsuit that is not based on well-pleaded allegations, but rather they have no claim to be made. And remember, the prosecuting assistant U.S. attorney at the sentencing of BNPP said that the victims of the embassy attacks have no claim against BNPP. They can't prove that BNPP had anything to do with these attacks. So that's not suggestive of a compromise. That's not suggestive of a statute of limitations issue. The government has said that BNPP is not liable to the victims of the horrible embassy attacks.
In prosecuting their claims against Sudan, did the plaintiffs have to establish that the support that Sudan gave Al-Qaeda actually led to the bombing?
It was done on the basis of a default, Your Honor, number one. So I don't know exactly what evidence is, but to answer your question directly, under Rothstein, they do not need to show that because it's a case of direct support. We have to, under the ATA material support jurisprudence, distinguish between allegations of direct support and allegations of indirect support. And as Judge Griffith alluded to when he was speaking with my friend, Rothstein stands for the proposition that showing the first stage of funding a state sponsor of terrorism is not enough. You're not responsible for everything that the state may do with the funds that you provide.
But here's what I'm trying to get at. So let's suppose Sudan says for every dollar that you give us, a dime is going to Al-Qaeda. And knowing that you give a dollar to Sudan, is that indirect support of Al-Qaeda, or is it that direct support?
It is indirect support, but you have satisfied Rothstein by establishing, based on Sudan's own words, that the money you give to Sudan will be given to the terrorist organization. That's completely different from this case.
But you haven't satisfied the other part of what you said Rothstein requires, which is that money was used to fund or contribute to the bombing.
But, Your Honor, if you can make a well-pleaded allegation based on Sudan's own statement that they are going to give a percentage of whatever funds you provide them to Al-Qaeda, I would suspect that you have a plausible basis for going forward with your lawsuit. In contrast to this case...
But what's the legal principle that you're using to say that you don't have to show that the dollars went towards the bombing in one instance but not in another?
Because, Your Honor, under the by reason of proximate causation standard, which requires an allegation of but-for causation, it is an absolute threshold requirement to say, to be able to allege on a well-pleaded basis that the monies that were provided to Sudan were in turn provided to Al-Qaeda. And this court has already ruled with these same plaintiffs presenting the evidence that there is no evidence that the monies went to Al-Qaeda. That is the principle of law. By reason of causation.
Based on a case where there was a default judgment?
No, based on Rothstein and based on Al-Raji. Rothstein and Al-Raji, which courts around the country are following, and I urge this court to follow as well, provide that a case of indirect support is different from a case of direct support. And the reason for that is that Congress deliberately chose to use the by reason of standard. And the by reason of standard requires but-for causation. And going back to Judge Griffith's colloquy with Mr. Vail, it is just, to me, a matter of simple common sense that, okay, you have gotten to second base by alleging that BNPP provided funds to Sudan, but you can't get all the way home under Rothstein and Al-Raji without presenting well-pleaded allegations that funds were provided, any funds were provided, let alone the funds that BNPP made available, that any funds were provided to Sudan. And there is nothing in the record, but more importantly, to your point, Judge Wilkins, nothing in the complaint that is a well-pleaded allegation that any funds were provided to Sudan. To the contrary, this court ruled, and Judge Bates ruled before it, that there is no evidence whatsoever that Sudan provided any funds to Al-Qaeda. To the contrary, the evidence is that Al-Qaeda, given its riches at the time, provided funds to Sudan.
Mr. Freeman, before you sit down, I want to ask you a series of questions, and then Mr. Vail, I'd like you to respond to Mr. Friedman's responses to me. And the first question is, does the complaint allege that BNP was a participant in the terrorist attacks?
No.
Does the complaint allege that BNP provided money to Al-Qaeda?
No.
Does it allege that the U.S. currency that BNP transferred to Sudan was given to Al-Qaeda?
No.
Does the complaint allege that if BNP had not transferred U.S. currency to Sudan, that Sudan would not have funded the attacks?
No.
Which injured the plaintiffs?
No, it does not allege that at all, Your Honor. And it's on all fours with Rothstein, because those same factors are the factors that the Second Circuit cited with respect to UBS. And none of those allegations are in this complaint.
Okay, fine, thanks.
Your Honor, Judge Griffith, may I just make one final point? Your Honor referred to the fact that how can they find these things out without discovery? And I've frankly given that some thought. This court has never accepted the notion that a case should be permitted to proceed in the absence of Iqbal-compliant claims merely to allow a plaintiff to obtain discovery that might help that plaintiff to state a claim later on. That is a bootstrap. That would read Iqbal out of the books. It would read Rule 12b-6 out of the books. But most importantly, it would change the Anti-Terrorism Act. Again, for the last time, Congress deliberately chose the by reason of standard, knowing that it had been previously construed by the Supreme Court to require but for causation. And here, the complaint does not allege any but for causation because it doesn't allege any of the things that Judge Randolph cited. Okay.
Thank you very much,
Your Honors. I appreciate your indulgence.
How much time did Mr. Vail have?
3 minutes.
3 minutes. And I think you ought to begin with Judge Randolph's questions.
Judge Randolph, if you could repeat your questions, I couldn't get them quickly enough.
Does the complaint allege that BNP was a participant in the terrorist attacks?
No.
Does the complaint allege that BNP provided money to Al-Qaeda?
Yes.
It does? Where?
It alleges that it gave money to Sudan.
No, that's not my question.
Directly?
Yes.
No.
No. Does it allege that U.S. currency that BNP transferred to Sudan was given to Al-Qaeda?
Yes.
Okay. Does it allege that if BNP had not transferred U.S. currency to Sudan, the attacks would not have occurred?
Yes, it does.
Where does it allege that?
I don't have the complaint. I don't have it in mind.
You know the complaint because you wrote it, didn't you?
Yes. It definitely does allege that the attacks...
You don't have the complaint?
I have it.
You're here on a case...
I have it with me, but
okay.
I can't remember the paragraph number.
It's about a critical allegation.
This case is all about the complaint, Mr. Vail.
I don't have it in mind.
You remember the question?
Yes, I do remember the question. If it alleges that the acts would not have happened but for...
If BNP had not transferred U.S. currency to Sudan.
Yes. Your Honor, I think paragraphs 14 through 19, 14 through 20 read together. We'll assert that allegation. They said BNP did this, others didn't. Their
14,
actions. And they,
14,
14 through 20, 14 through 18. But there is a specific paragraph asserting that the...
I don't see it in 14.
Asserting that the... that they would not have occurred but for the result of, but for this funding.
Paragraph 12, perhaps?
The direct connection to the attacks is paragraph 110.
Well, we'll take a look at that. Good times.
Okay.
All right. Your Honor, if I may come back to a couple other questions. BNP was convicted of conspiracy to violate Trading with the Enemy Act. Mr. Friedman made the assertion that there was no direct aid. In affirming the Sudan's liability, you found, I quote, one crucial factor in Sudan's liability was that Sudan's state-owned bank, the bank aided here by BNP, I quote, gave Al-Qaeda access to the formal banking system, which proved useful for laundering money and financing terrorist operations. That's at page 795 of your October decision in the Sudan case. On causality, Judge Griffith, you were asking me this. The specific statement of the restatement, section of the restatement is section 390 of the restatement second. And that's when you give something to a bad actor directly or through another person, quote, you are liable. And that echoes the Supreme Court's decision, Milwaukee-St. Paul Railway Company versus Kellogg, 94 U.S. 469, older case. The proximate cause of a disaster, quote, may operate through successive instruments, close quote. Mr. Friedman proposes an idea of pleading that even after Iqbal has nothing to do with Rule 8 and has more to do with 19th century forms than anything we know under the federal rules. Justice Marshall, Chief Justice Marshall in Marbury.
Okay, we have your argument. Thank you very much. The case is submitted.
Thank you.